the Democrats and the Republicans playing out that same old blame game day after day. We have 12 days and 21 hours before Armageddon happens, according to Tiny Tim Geithner. That's when we smash our head completely against the debt ceiling. So we've already done that, but when we would default on the loans. Kate Delaney's My Name, this show, America Tonight. We'll give you a blow-by-blow on the latest there, the Gang of Six deficit plan, and also the House Republicans sailing through their own piece of legislation that Obama says he'll veto and certainly won't get through the Senate. But before we go there, interesting, when we talk about wiretapping and rights and concerns over privacy, this has been a big blow to Rupert Murdoch. The fact that News of the World had one be crushed after it was learned that hundreds of phones were hacked into, leading to scoops in that tabloidy rag. So, Rupert Murdoch, the man who built the empire, and his son James, who's expected to inherit it, had to testify before special members of parliament that form a committee to talk about what they knew or didn't know or whatever. And James Murdoch handled it pretty well, talking about the legal fees and seemingly surprised. And then Rupert Murdoch was kind of all over the map, and he lost sight even of what he was saying. So check out the Murdoch Men.
Here's the world. Perhaps I lost sight of, maybe because it was so small in the general frame of our company.
When the allegations came out, I said, "How can we? Are we really? Are we doing this? Is this what the company is doing?"
Yeah, too late for that. You better know what that company's doing, because the stock price continues to plummet. One thing that happened that kind of gave everybody a jolt is a guy went after Rupert Murdoch with a foam pie. He was trying to smash it in his face. Some of it did get on Murdoch, but his wife leapt up and knocked everything away. She has the stamina of a 42-year-old. Oh, because she is 42. So Murdoch trying to stop the bleeding. All right, speaking of bleeding, I said this Gang of Six, the president is endorsing that deficit plan. And, of course, that's comprised of Democrats and Republicans. The bipartisan proposal got kind of a mixed review when it came to the House, ultimately. But Obama is key to this because, of course, he's the executive branch and has the veto power. And so he's urging congressional folks to use that as the basis for a bill that he could sign before the debt limit deadline. And, you know, it's all money that we're playing with now at this point. But the plan would reduce deficits, they say, by $3.7 trillion. That's, of course, over that 10-year period. It would call for the elimination of some tax deductions and preferences and reductions of others. That would pick up about a million in new money coming up. And then they would require $145 billion in cuts to national defense and homeland security and hundreds of billions of cuts to other federal departments. That is a step in the right direction. But if you took a few little facets of this and threw it into ultimately what the House Republicans came up with, I think you could possibly fine-tune it and would have a pretty decent idea. And the idea that they're talking about, the Republicans, is certainly completely different from what the Democrats are offering up. It's in the proposal, what they're asking for is that you have some accountability put into it. So there's some teeth in it. And the accountability can mean a myriad of things. But the main thing is the buck stops somewhere. And somebody raises their hand and says, "Wow, I really screwed up and I really open the floodgates on this one, that there's somebody who answers the call, whoever it is, whoever it is. Okay, so check this out. Mitt Romney, I got to go into this quickly. Mitt Romney is now 9-1 with an advantage, 9-1 cash edge, because that's what you have to be. You have to be a fundraiser when you're doing this gig. You do. And Romney now leads all Republicans in the contest for campaign cash. So at this point, he seems to be reeling in just a little bit more of the votes, and certainly he's reeling in as many Republicans as he can, along with the cash that he's picking their pockets for. Romney's $12.6 million in the bank, though, certainly is a far less than what you're seeing for this incumbent president. Then you have the rest of the players, the Tim Pawlentes, etc., and how much money are they truly, truly raking in and putting out? That's where you have to question how much of it is a little bit inflated and how much of it is real. So the blame game is alive and well in D.C. Even though there's two different proposals on the table, it's all going to come down to the votes. And are people voting strictly on their wallets or pocketbooks, or are they voting for other factors? You know, I mean, whatever happened to bargaining? Whatever happened to serious compromise? Whatever happened to that, debating over why you're doing one thing differently than you're doing another thing? That's got to be part of this equation. And Mitch McConnell really believes that the debt ceiling will be enlarged and that it will be raised, that it will absolutely go up. And there is no fear that there's going to be any kind of a shutdown. I don't know. I'm sort of on the fence because of hearing different information and then, of course, reading my own stuff. And it certainly doesn't look good, though. Doesn't look good. I'll tell you who it's looking good for, and this is what we're going to end this segment on. If we turn to the campaign 2012 and who's zooming who, who's doing really good, Michelle Bachmann is now second place in the crowded field, because it is crazy how many people are running for president. Mitt Romney, Michelle Bachmann, Texas Governor Rick Perry, Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, Herm Cain, Rick Santorum, also John Huntsman, and now in second place, Michelle Bachmann has emerged. 16% of the Republican primary voters. A month ago, before she announced her presidential bid, she was just at 3% in the survey. Wow. So, again, that was a month ago. She went from 3% to 16%. Absolutely incredible. Stay with us. Coming up here on America Tonight, we're going to talk to my pal Stephen Shohat, our man in the West. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado, and to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms.
I get it.
You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30%, while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should, too. Find out what they know. Call us, and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Ready to save? Then you're ready for the Super Summer Sale at Herbal Healer Academy. Herbal Healer has been the leader in quality natural supplements for 23 years. Log on to herbalhealer.com and take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on 500 parts per million colloidal silver, the best pharmaceutical grade available, and all sizes on sale. Super Male Plex with Uhimbe and Super Femplex for summer toning. Buy glucosamine chondroitin 60 caps, summer sale priced at only $12. Colon Enhancer 250 caps, summer sale priced at just $18. And if your brain's a little foggy, we have a great supplement on sale called Memory Power. Log on and hit the postcard specials link for more super summer savings at herbalhealer.com. As always, new customers get a free catalog with first order. Herbal Healer Academy, healing the world with nature, one person at a time.
America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, and there's some controversy brewing. There's always some controversy when it comes to anatomically correct dolls or dolls that apparently have gone over the top. So check this out. There's a new doll that's coming into stores now across the country, and it's called the Breast Milk Baby. Supposedly it claims to teach young girls how to breastfeed. It's a company out of Spain. It comes with, I'll go into a little bit of detail, a halter top that has two flowers, and the little girl, you know, basically puts on the top, holds the baby up with the flowers, where the flowers are, and it makes suckling sounds. It is a huge seller, a top seller in Europe. And what they say on their website, I checked it out today, is it lets young girls express their love and affection in their most natural way possible, just like mommy. What do you think, folks? Fair or foul? 800-259-5791. You know my digits, 800-259-5791. Amy Ziccarelli joins us now from Kidville in Dallas, and she's an early childhood education expert. Amy, just initially your reaction when you heard about this doll.
My initial reaction was, what happened to playing with Cabbage Patch Kids, oversized baby dolls that cry, even just the ones that, you know, you feed the bottle or what have you. Children express themselves as well as learn through dramatic play. And let's let children be children. Little girls love to act like mommy and nurture their motherly side, and I think this doll takes that behavior to a new level. I'm a mother of two, owner of a kids-based business. I just don't think it's developmentally appropriate to teach a child how to breastfeed at such an early age. It's not that I don't think that breastfeeding is a dirty behavior or inappropriate or sexualized in any way. I breastfed my children. I just don't think it's an appropriate behavior to be teaching a young child.
Yeah, and I mentioned that in Europe it was such a runaway seller, but In the United States, I got to tell you, just my initial reaction to whether I think, even from a product point of view, I don't know that I think this is going to be a big seller. Do you?
No, I mean, I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of controversy. There's two sides. You know, there's the side that says, well, this is completely natural and that sort of thing. I mean, I can understand a little bit the parent who maybe has had a new baby in their home and they have, you know, older children in the home that are a little bit older children that are trying, you know, to understand and, you know, talking to them about breastfeeding and kind of explaining the concept to them. I mean, that's a completely natural behavior. But this is a doll that takes on actually teaching breastfeeding. And so when it comes to dramatic play, which is very, you know, a great way for children to learn, you know, through different toys that they play with. You know, let's say they take pretend food and a frying pan and they put them together and they're making up food and serving like they were at a restaurant. This doll is very purposely teaching an action. It's not very creative in the play. It's actually teaching this behavior. And the question is, does that behavior need to be taught at such an early age?
Yeah, and you know, this is your bag, early childhood expert, as I said, an education expert. And kids, and you're the expert, I'm the talk show host, but don't kids take you where you lead them? In other words, if you lead them down this path, they're going to just follow.
Right. It is a leading behavior. Like, when you look at, you know, play-based play and learning, this is, you know, it's a leading action. I mean, it's not the same debate, but similar. The, you know, 6 to 7 hours of playing aggressive video games. I mean, is that healthy for the child? Is, you know, people go a step further and ask, oh, is that going to create a criminal down the road? What is this doll going to do? Well, it's you can't anticipate what, you know, what this is going to create, but with young children, this is aimed at young girls, you know, does it push them into that realm of wanting children earlier? You know, all those questions start being asked.
Yeah. And when you know, when we look at kids, where, of what ages are they most impressionable, do you think?
They're most impressionable at, I mean, the early ages. I mean, we're talking, you know, that 1 to 5 years old is where that major development goes on of impressions. You know, it's at 4 to 5 years old, which is where this doll is aimed. Obviously, anybody, you could buy it for any age. That's when, that 4 to 5 years old, that's when they start to show some understanding of moral reasoning. They explore ideas about fairness, good or bad behavior. They compare themselves with others. They're developing friendships. They're developing kind of that awareness of other people's feelings. And interesting, that's when they start showing the interest in exploring sex differences between the boys and the girls.
Yeah.
They do imaginative play with other children, and that's when they're doing dress up, house, all of that. And this is kind of where that doll is aimed, is in that, you know, age frame of children.
Yeah. You mentioned that you're a businesswoman, of course, Kidville. Explain for people listening what Kidville is and what you do.
Kidville is it's a one-stop shop for kids. We do classes in music, art, gym, dance, yoga. We also have a boutique for children with clothes and accessories. We have an actual play village that's got a diner, a gas station, beauty boutique, grocery store, where they actually go in and there's toys set out and they do their own dramatic play and that sort of thing. We are aimed at ages 0 to 6, and we also have a music program called Little Maestros that's a 4-piece live band with a lead singer, guitar, drummer, keyboard, and it's very interactive with the children, that kind of teaches that music concept with the instruments and not just hearing the music.
Yeah. Very, very cool. All right, Amy Zigarelli, thanks so much. We appreciate your time here on ATN.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, can you imagine getting that toy, the breast milk baby, that's what it's called, and the company is the company that I mentioned out of Spain, Bergeron Toys, and that's how you pronounce it. So it has that top I was describing, and ultimately in the United States, can you imagine these really, really little girls asking all these questions and running around with these dolls? I just don't see it flying. I don't care what school it is or what crowd these little girls are in, whether they're going to pre-K or it's a little bit above pre-K, but pretty young is what we're talking about here. And the company's fighting back and saying it's ridiculous that this just lets the girls do what they should do and they can be just like their mother. But you have to ask yourself, come on, is it too far? Of course it's too far. The pendulum has swung in such a wild direction on this. And the key thing here is I just don't see it flying in the U.S. Regardless, this company in Europe, it's working, but I don't see it working here anyway. They must have done some research and tried to test it out as far as bringing the dolls into the United States. And you'd have to order it off the website anyway for the most part. I don't think very many stores are carrying them. And it has kind of exploded into, as I said at the beginning, mini controversy where people are talking about, boy, you got to be kidding me. You've got the suckling sounds, the burping sounds, and, you know, phone lines are blowing off the hook. A station in New York did a story on it, and they, of course, perfect place for man on the street. You know what that is, right? You just randomly pick people and ask them, hey, what do you think of this? And you show them the doll, and they freak out. And New Yorkers don't mince words, and that's exactly what they did. They freaked out saying it's ridiculous, crazy to let little kids be worrying about what breastfeeding is and breastfeeding. And I guess in general, I guess that's the whole gist of this. I mean, to me, why are you taking that route anyway? Can't they just be little girls for a little while longer? I mean, the second they come out of the womb, they still have placenta on their head. Hey, this is it. You got to learn how to be a woman right now. Coming up next on the flip side, we're going to Hollywood, so hang with us.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boost resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Local Army Navy surplus stores are hard to find these days, but not military issue supplies. They're right here online at mainmilitary.com. That's right, just like the state, M-A-I-N-E, military.com. We have everything for true, total preparedness. MaineMilitary.com is not a typical website. It has much more than your old surplus store. Quality military-issue survival gear like canteens, mess kits, utensils, gas masks, filters, and chemical suits, magnesium fire-starting tools, strike anywhere, waterproof, and storm matches, first aid kits, splints, tourniquets, parachute 550 cord, military manuals, sandbags by the bale, and a huge Molly assortment of vests and pouches for every need. Call 207-989-6783, 207-989-6783, or visit MaineMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, military.com. The Maine name in military supply.
What would you do with a check for $25,000? What if you could eliminate all of your credit card debt in 90 days and keep all of your money? Hi, I'm Jason Davenport, and I've just completed ZeroDebt100.com, a program that stops and prevents debt collections of all kinds, including debt collectors and foreclosures, with guaranteed results. Forget loan modification. Zero Debt showed me how to get the banks to pay my property taxes and insurance while stopping my foreclosure without paying one dime. An attorney tried to garnish my wages, but the court denied his request because of what I filed from the Zero Debt program. Find out how I did this by calling Zero Debt today at 800-477-9256. Tell them Jason sent you and ask for the Zero Debt special and the free bonus promotion about stopping an IRS levy and getting your money back. Tell them Jason sent you and call 800-477-9256. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit www.zerodebt100.com.
You've been lied to. Lied to by the Wall Street propaganda machine, the government, and the talking heads in the media. The market is in for another crash. Real estate is already in a double-dip recession, and if you want to keep your hard-earned money safe, this message is for you. My name is Brett Kitchen, and after losing 35% of my money when the market crashed, I said enough is enough. I searched and discovered a way to safely grow my money, participate in potential double-digit gains, but also have my money protected when the crashes come. Plus, it could save you thousands in taxes. I want you to get a free copy of my new book, Safe Money Millionaire, where I share this powerful tool that people like Walt Disney and JCPenney used to safely grow their wealth. Call 1-800-675-1640 right now to get your free copy. Again, that's 1-800-675-1640. I'm giving away a limited number of copies today, so call 1-800-675-1640.
Show out of the gate, huh? We'll go from those controversial dolls that are being produced in Spain, coming out talking about what's going on the Hill, the back and forth, the constant dead horses that are flying around, and D-Day being August 2nd, what happens then, who stays the course, who bails on the ship, and etc. And of course, we'll pick that up on the flip side. But each and every week, Stephen Shohead, our man in Hollywood, joins us. And, man, this guy, I'm telling you, his book is fantastic. Hollywood Stories, short, entertaining anecdotes about the stars and legends of the movies. Because it's got all these snippets of stories. That's the kind of stuff I love. And I think I read Stephen's book for the first time, I want to say, probably a year and a half ago. And I was just rereading some of the parts of it the other day. How about that for welcoming him into the show? And we thought we'd talk about Disneyland for a specific reason. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
Hey, Kate, thank you for the nice welcome. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you, my friend. You know, it's interesting. You'd sent me a note last week and you said, hey, check this out, you know, Disneyland. And I had this interesting conversation. It's just kind of a sidebar, but I had this interesting conversation with somebody about, wasn't it great in the good old days when you had a layover in L.A.? You could actually go to Disneyland and whip through on some of the rides and get back to the airport in time. Now, I wouldn't dare try that unless you had a layover where you were staying overnight. But
yeah, maybe Orange County Airport.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe Orange County Airport. But just even mentioning the word Disneyland, it's funny. It's that it's the one spot where you say Disneyland to anybody, and they've got, boom, instant memory. I'm assuming that you spent some time there because you grew up there.
You know, actually, I'll tell you the day we really had fun at Disneyland was Super Bowl Sunday. Everybody was watching the Super Bowl. I didn't care because the Rams weren't in it. And when we just had a blast. It got on the ride so fast. It was just fantastic. So if anybody has that airport idea, I suggest combining it with Super Bowl Sunday.
And, there you go.
Yeah.
Because it'll be like a vacant part.
Right. Well, it wasn't vacant, but it was manageable. You know, part of the fun at Disneyland is seeing all the people, I think, you know, and just walking. I like sometimes to walk around and see, just have a look at the buildings and just, I mean, obviously I'm a great admirer of Walt Disney. I have a whole chapter about him in my book. And just, you know, looking at it now, it seems like such an obvious can't miss idea. But when he did it, I mean, it was fraught with difficulty, and just looking around at all the buildings reminds me of the story when he had President Sukarno from Indonesia. He gave him a tour shortly after Disneyland opened, and they were riding around on the Mark Twain steamer, and Sukarno just couldn't believe what he was looking at and said, "Mr. Disney, this is so splendid. You must be very rich." And Walt grinned and said, "Oh, yeah, very rich. I only owe $10 million. Yeah, very rich."
And so you published an article that you wrote, was published in Big Hollywood, and you talked about Disneyland and the fact that your title was, unlike Walt Disney's movies, Disneyland was never finished. What did you mean by that?
Well, with the movies and the cartoons, once they were done, they were done, and it frustrated him. The one cartoon he wanted to not have that happen with was Fantasia, being a series of cartoons. He thought it could play forever in some theaters, and every month he'd add new things, and that would sort of fulfill him, but Fantasia turned out to be a bust at the box office. And the other films, even the great successes like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, he would watch it and fret over little things that were wrong, like the prince sort of shimmied in and out of view in one scene, but he had no opportunity at that time to go back and improve them. And of course there was that element with movies where you're shooting in the dark, like Alice in Wonderland, the 1951 cartoon lost $1 million in its first release. So he had that frustration where, you know, you have to put it out there, the bank is putting pressure on you. But Disneyland was never done, and that was something that thrilled him. And he used to make that comparison with that and the movies. And there were things, the exciting things for him were after the park opened, learning what worked and what didn't work. Like you have people walking on the grass. It really bothered him. So build little bridges over the grass. You have this ugly boat dock. Build a pretty restaurant next to it. He had the bean counters at the park telling him, shorten the rides, make them quicker, get more people through. He said, no, that's not my idea. I'm going to lengthen the rides. I'm going to give people value for their money. They won't mind waiting if they're getting something wonderful at the end of the line when they reach the, you know, when they reached the ride. Some things didn't work. Right after Disneyland opened, there was this Mickey Mouse Club circus that he tried to tie it in with the Mickey Mouse Club, and his staff told him, circus, not a good idea. And he said, well, you know, I'm from Missouri. You're going to have to show me. And it turned out they were right. He had one incident where there was this trapeze artist who lost her top while performing in front of the kids. Not too much you can do about it in midair. The camels kept spitting into the crowd. The llamas got loose and ran down Main Street, and he started thinking, oh, my gosh, what if a lion or tiger got loose?
Sure.
And they were all poorly attended performances. So, you know, he was upset about it, but he had to kill it. So, you know, you could experiment in ways with Disneyland that you couldn't do with a movie. And there were endless opportunities to exploit his interests. Like he was fascinated reading about the sailing ship Columbia, the first American ship to circumnavigate the globe, and he built a near-perfect replica of it for the already busy Disneyland Park waterways, the rivers of America. And he fell in love with snow sports in Switzerland in the late 1950s, and that inspired him to build the Matterhorn bobsled ride. And he and his wife Lillian, they used to love shopping for antiques in New Orleans. So that inspired the creation of New Orleans Square. And so it was endless creativity till he died, with Disneyland.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You talked about this right off the top, that to build the Magic Kingdom, I think some people would be surprised about this. You're talking mid-50s. How much was the dollar amount on that?
$17 million. And wow. And the way he got the money was very innovative. The key to, I mean, he actually mortgaged his house and borrowed against his life insurance policy. So his wife Lillian was not always thrilled, even though, you know, she always supported him in the end. It was a nerve-wracking thing, but the key was his decision to get into television. And at the time, there were moguls in Hollywood like Louis B. Mayer and Jack Warner who were really upset about TV to the point of firing cameramen if they found out they owned TVs at home. And Bob Hope was not allowed to host the Academy Awards because they were so mad at him for having a TV special. So there was a lot of resentment towards TV. So Walt was pretty unique among moguls. I mean, other people were getting into TV as well, like Lucille Ball. But as far as being a mogul went, Walt didn't see TV as a threat at all, and CBS and NBC were the top two rated networks. ABC was a distant third, mostly public address announcements, so they were the ones who were the easiest to deal with. And Walt created two television shows for them, Disneyland, and then later on the Mickey Mouse Club, and then later a third show, Zorro. And Disneyland, of course, eventually became the Wonderful World of Disney. And in return, ABC was the one who financed the loan guarantees that he needed to build Disneyland. So it was a deal that worked out well for everybody, although there was tension eventually because Walt always put himself in the mind of a customer when he was improving Disneyland. And ABC kind of was thinking, well, let's get the money out to the stockholders, let's cash in on the profits, and Walt would always reinvest in the park, doing things like putting fancy furniture in a medium-priced restaurant or lavishing more money on a parade, and eventually he and ABC broke up. He bought them out because he was, very hard for partners to deal with and vice versa.
Yeah. We have just a couple minutes left, but the opening day turned out to be disastrous. Why?
Well, there were 10,000 invitation-only tickets sent out. They were easy to forge, so three times that many people showed up, and they couldn't handle it. The rides, nearly half the rides broke down because of the excess weight. The asphalt on Main Street wasn't dry, so you had a lot of ladies with high-heeled shoes getting stuck and sinking. There was a plumber strike, so Walt had a choice between the bathrooms working and the drinking fountains working. And, of course, he wanted cleanliness, so he just chose to have the bathrooms working, and people were passing out. It was a hot day in July, and the day was sponsored by Pepsi Cola, so a lot of people in the park assumed that the drinking fountains not working was a conspiracy by Pepsi to sell more products, so that infuriated people. And Fantasyland sprung a gas leak, so that had to be shut down. Tomorrowland didn't really have the capacity to handle customers. It wasn't really... He didn't have it conceptually down. So as the day wore on, fights broke out between the ride operators and the patrons. And like I said, had it been a movie, maybe that would have been the end. But Walt read about it in the paper the next day and immediately came back to Disneyland and started fixing things.
Wow. Wow, fascinating stuff. Stephen, as always, pick up a copy of Hollywood Stories, short entertaining anecdotes about the stars and legends of the movies, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You got it. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure some of the people listening to me right now, you've got those memories of Disneyland. Now you know a little bit of the inside scoop about what it was like behind the scenes. Crazy. Coming up, odds and ends. Would you believe Rupert Murdoch gets to eat some humble pie? What does that mean? We'll talk about it.
Phase one of the insiders' plan for a one-world government has been initiated with the recent bailout. International bankers and power brokers have engineered the current crisis to create a new currency and a new world bank to act as savior. But we've only seen the beginning. Their next engineered crisis will be on a scale never before seen in modern times. Shortages and empty shelves will spread fear and panic across the land. The insiders have discovered that they must control two things to seize total power. Phase one is a one-world currency, which we are currently being prepared to accept. Phase 2 of their insidious plan is complete control of our food supplies. Go to www.foodshortageusa.com for the details. That's www.foodshortageusa.com to learn how to prepare for the unthinkable. Don't wait for empty shelves. Learn how to make your own survival foods for pennies on the dollar. Go to foodshortageusa.com or call 877-327-0365. That's 877-327-0365.
Are you tired of spending money for metal canning lids year after year? Then stop! Stop buying metal lids and get Tatler reusable canning lids. Made of USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, Tatler canning lids let you safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways that contain BPA, but Tatler canning lids are indefinitely reusable and guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning and contain no BPA. Tatler lids are dishwasher-safe, perfect for standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders by phone at 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's 1-877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com. Tatler Reusable Canning Lids, the original since 1976.
Energy, energy, and more energy.
We all need it. Get the energy you need quick through the powers of wild forest extracts. Wild chaga and birch bark are the secrets of the forest, used exclusively by Russian athletes. Wild chaga is the world's top source of superoxide dismutase, the critical enzyme that blocks the aging process. Chaga is good for your heart and even helps support healthy arteries. Wild birch extract is the top source of betulin, a natural sterol needed by every cell of the body. And healthy cells mean a healthy body and a more powerful you. No wonder it's known as a king of all herbs. Experience real energy and power like you've never dreamed possible. Take Chago Charge Tea with Wild Birch Bark every day and Chagamax capsules to get the energy you need.
You deserve it.
Order today by calling 877-817-9829. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Wiretapping on this show end to end, and now Rupert Murdoch and his son right in the middle of a controversy saying that they're not to blame. It's worth bringing this up on Odds and Ends just for anything to get away from the nonsense going on the Hill for a few seconds, because you want to talk about odds. There are a lot of odds in both directions. But with the Murdoch thing, in case you don't know this, what's happened is News of the World tanked. Basically, Murdoch tanked it after it was revealed that allegedly there was massive wiretapping going on, and information that was gathered was given to News of the World. So reporters were writing stories, breaking stories, because they had the inside scoop right from the mouth of whoever, whether it was a celebrity, whether it was the royals, or some of the families of the victims on 9/11, which they're going for the jugular on that one. And that is twisted beyond belief, in my opinion. What kind of ghoul does that? I mean, it's one thing, you know, you're the tabloidy scum of the earth. And so you follow John Edwards around, which he got what he deserved, but you're sneaking around the hotel and sliding up the elevator and going through trash and all that sort of stuff. But that's still a little bit different than being part of this illegal phone hacking deal. So for about 3 hours, the Murdochs basically were peppered, if you will, with questions on this whole tapping thing. You know, what they knew, they pressed both of them, Rupert Murdoch and his son James, on answers as to who might have authorized or even known of the reporters' hacking of those voicemails. So I like this one section. I was somewhere, and I was, because it went on so long, I had been to two different places, and I was watching this, and one of them said, "Do you accept that ultimately you are responsible for this whole fiasco?" And vintage Murdoch, he just says, "Nah, nah." And then his son was the one who tried to reel it in, tried to say, "Oh, you know, we had no idea. I had no idea of this." And they're just trying to back off of now what's become a serious mess for the Murdochs, because it's all about the stock, baby. And when the shareholders see that the stock is tanking, that's not good, because the Murdochs are running a serious empire. So little chinks are being taken out of that empire, that media empire. And I don't doubt this. I mean, really, you think Rupert Murdoch knew anything about the day-to-day details of what was going on in any of these news departments? He has so many. He has monopoly, basically. Do you think he knows what's happening? Oh, yeah, that assignment editor in New York, and then there's that one in London. And then there's that reporter, that new reporter that broke that story. Geez, it's a good thing that we were able to hack into some of those lines. Of course not. Of course he didn't know that. But it is true, ultimately, it's your company. And who's ever put in place and whatever happens, it's yours. So news of the world is gone. What happened was, too, especially, they would get so much extra juice on titillating stories, if you will, because they had some kind of a hacking thing going on. And, you know, he says, "I'm not the best person to clear this up." And his big statement, I think, was that he feels betrayed because there was people he trusted and that they behaved disgracefully. They betrayed the company. It's up for them to pay and all that sort of stuff. And then you had the former top exec that everybody wanted to hear from, Rebecca Brooks, who said she never paid a policeman or ever said, "Go ahead and write a check to the police." So now you have these journalists who were left hanging out to dry from the paper that he sliced off, who are accused of bribing the cops to get private info about people, including the royals. And you have to figure some of them, if there is anywhere to go up the chain, they're going to go after it. And this scandal, more than in the U.S., even though it does touch the U.S., I mean, the thing with the 9/11 families, that's just wrong. Come on. And you've got the Brits, though, in a much bigger uproar over this because of now what it means kind of globally. Because of who they hacked into. So when I said humble pie, somebody did throw a pie at Rupert Murdoch when all this was going on. And it wasn't a pie. It was like a shaving cream pie kind of thing. So he really did eat a version of humble pie. And the FBI is looking into News Corp and what happened, especially the angle there is the whole September 11th, 2001 terror attack and whether or not any of the victims were hacked into by Murdoch's people. He's pretty much saying he has no knowledge of it and he doesn't believe that it happened. But he's the head of the company. And they can say they're sorry and they can say, you know, the listening of voicemail or victims of crime or, you know, "We're sorry about that. And, you know, we it's the people who we hired and whatever, and we're acting quick and decisively, you know, is this ultimately enough to save the stock? That's the rippling effect of what they care about, is the stock. And you know something's up when the prime minister cuts short a trip to Africa to go to London to deal with it. I mean, then you know it. Why would Cameron do that? Well, the reason is because he hired Andy Coulson, who's a former News of the World editor, who resigned as Cameron's spokesperson after the staffers were jailed for hacking voicemails. And so he resigns his post, you know, back at the beginning of the year, and has since been arrested. And now this was the guy that he hired, so it puts him in a precarious position. So that's the scoop on Rupert Murdoch, right? Running afoul of shareholders. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, meaning back here in the U.S., as we've got this debt reduction framework that's being put together by the now Gang of Seven in the Senate, they're saying that they hope that they can somehow stop the stalemate in these negotiations. Maybe we can break it open. While the House has passed a measure that would slam strict caps on any federal spending and would make it almost impossible, not totally, but almost impossible to raise taxes. Ultimately, the agreement part of this to make all this happen with the cut and cap would be the fact that there would be an amendment that this couldn't happen in the future to the Constitution. And the president is praising the Gang of Six plus one, now seven, right? And saying, forget the cut and crap stuff, because that's not going to fly. I'm not going to sign it. I am going to wing a V on that big time. He's going to go for the veto. So expect more head-butting to continue to happen on the Hill. And they're going to work into the weekend. Trust me, they're going to work into the weekend if Harry Reid has anything to say about it. He said the other day, we'll just keep on working on it. But that deadline, you know, when you're driving around and you look in your rearview mirror and it says objects appear closer than they are, this really is a lot closer, I think, than they realize.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
This constant bickering is going to put me in a coma.